Well, I'm using a handheld microphone this morning because it is my pleasure to tell you it's Freaky Wednesday. Similar to Freaky Friday, where the mother and daughter change places for the day. Jill, who I'm not old enough to be your mother unless I had a child as a teenager, Jill Shelton is trading places with me today. So this is my great joy to, for many of you, introduce you to Jill for the first time. She is a gifted teacher, and it is really fun to be able to walk alongside somebody and see God's gift in her and participate in fanning and developing that gift. So I'm grateful for Jill. Yes, thank you for applauding for that, because it's true. Jill has been really gracious to come alongside me and help out in the weeks that I'm going to be preaching so that it gives me time to focus more on my sermon, and that's for the benefit of all, I think. So it is Freaky Wednesday. Jill and I are changing places for today, and I think that makes me Jamie Lee Curtis, and I kind of like that. So would you join me in welcoming, and I think that makes you Lindsay Lohan, yes, so good luck with that. Would you join me this morning in welcoming Jill Shelton, ladies? Here she is.
Oh. Thanks, Mom. Mom. You know, she's not old enough to be my mom. She would be like my favorite babysitter. I used to love when my parents would go out and we'd get a babysitter because they would play with us and do all kinds of things that moms don't always have time to do. So, Kay, you'd be like my favorite babysitter. Yeah. Well, good morning. Yes. Do you have a question about the... Are there some on the table out there?
There's more, too.
Okay, so good. Thank you for mentioning that, Nancy. Go ahead and make sure you have this one-page handout, because when we get to that part, you'll be lost for like 3 or 4 minutes if you don't. So go ahead and do what you need to do to get one in your little hands. And let me just get set up here. All right, it is going to be mix-up day. I just made that up yesterday. And when I went to this, I go to these exercise classes where I get my whole workout done in 36 minutes. And so we have 12 stations that we do for 1 minute each, twice, and then you have a 30-second rest in between. So yesterday, I talked myself into going, and I don't like to work out, so I was like, come on, Jill, you know you're going to feel better afterwards, putting my shoes on, get myself psyched up. I get there, and the teacher says, it's mix-up day, and I thought, what is mix-up day? And it was like totally different. It was a different workout. I wasn't used to it, and I'm so sore today. And she said, you're going to hate me, but you're going to love how this makes you feel. And so today is mix-up day. We're going to do a little bit of everything. So this is lesson one. This is the first day that we actually get to talk about some parables. And so I want to walk you through them. I want to offer some tools that might be helpful the rest of this year as we study. And hopefully I'll be able to tell you some stories and make it fun along the way. Okay, so here's where we're going to start this morning. Let's start in Matthew chapter 9. We're going to go into the question about fasting. Now, in the lesson today, Jen had us pick it up with the two parables. Really, they're metaphors, but Luke tells us that they are parables about the wineskins and the old garments. So I want to back up a little bit from there and give you some context of what is going on when Jesus tells these metaphors. So if you'll grab your handout, are we good? Does everybody have a handout? Can we go there now? Okay. Now, you're going to hate this, but bear with me. Okay, so what I wanted to share with you today is a little tool that you may find helpful as you are studying the parables and miracles this year. I am giving you a snippet from a synopsis. Now, this synopsis has become one of my favorite books on my shelf. So I made you a copy of the section from this book. Okay, it's called The Synopsis of the Four Gospels. This one is the older version. It was edited by a guy named Kurt Aland. If you want one of these, you can go on Amazon and you can either buy the old one for about $10 or $15, or you can buy the new edition, which is about $30, and it's the same material. They just changed the font. Luckily, the Bible hasn't changed, so they didn't change anything in the synopsis. So here's what's helpful about a synopsis. This guy had this idea, as many others have had, to put all four gospel accounts next to each other where there is a like story. So you can quickly see which gospels is this story in and what are the differences that the authors give in their writing of each account. So on the front side of your handout where you'll see some yellow highlighting, let's start there. And I took the liberty of highlighting some things so you could sort of see the difference. Now, I really like this synopsis because he even spaces everything so that at an eye's glance, you can sort of see where a word may be different or missing or someone else has a little extra. So this is the story of the unshrunk cloth and the wineskins. And so you'll see in the column that says Matthew, this is Matthew's account of that story. So I highlighted for you at the bottom, he added a line at the end that the other writers did not. He added, and so both are preserved. And then you'll notice, the other thing you may notice is that Mark and Matthew's accounts are really quite similar. So there's debate over which gospel was written first, which did they use a common manuscript, what happened, but in general, their accounts are very similar, and usually Luke's is quite similar. Those three, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, are called the synoptic gospels because they are similar, and then John is so different. In fact, this story doesn't even appear in John. Most of the stories we're doing this year actually don't appear in John. So you'll see in Luke's gospel, for example, he starts out saying he told them a parable. And if you read that in Greek, you would see the Greek word, which Kay taught us last week. And then look at how different his is. Luke says, and I highlighted this in little dots, no one tears a piece from a new garment and puts it upon an old garment. For if he does, he will tear the new, and the piece from the new will not match the old. Now, just for fun, take your pen, and I want you to focus on Luke's column, and circle every time you see the word new. I'll read it, and circle it as we go. Okay, Luke 5, verse 33. He told them a parable also. No one tears a piece from a new garment and puts it upon an old garment. If he does, he will tear the new, and the piece from the new will not match the old. So far, I've got three. And no one puts new wine into old wineskins. If he does, the new wine will burst the skins, and it will be spilled, and the skins will be destroyed. But new wine must be put into fresh wineskins. And no one drinking old wine desires new, for he says the old is good. Now we'll get into talking about what this all means in just a second, but I've got seven times that Luke says new. So what this tells me as I'm doing my little Bible study, and as you all can too, is that Luke is really emphasizing the newness of the kingdom that Jesus brought. And he's pointing out that there are some people that are clinging to the old, and they're missing the present realization of God's kingdom. So before we go into this story, let me back up and just tell you a little bit about what's going on in case you didn't take the time to read backwards out of this story. So if we look in Matthew, if I look into chapter 9, I can see that Jesus, his ministry is well underway. So he's beginning to face some criticism. And he's already been questioned a couple of times prior to this story about why are you doing this or why are you not doing that? Because he's not acting like a Jewish rabbi is supposed to act. Woo. Good thing I have a bookmark in there. So the disciples are with Jesus. And right before this happens, he has called Matthew. So he hasn't called all of his disciples yet. He's got some of them. But remember, he goes to Matthew, who is a tax collector. And at the time, tax collectors were despised. They were hated because what they did is they were Jews, but they were working for the Roman government, going around to these little provinces, collecting taxes from their fellow Jews. And what they would do is collect a little extra and keep it for themselves. So they were hated. They were despised. It's not like an IRS agent today. I'm not sure what it would be like today. But these people are shocked because of all the things Jesus is doing. And then here he goes and calls this guy Matthew, a tax collector, to come and follow him and be part of his group. Then, moreover, they go and eat at Matthew's house. So in chapter 9, verse 10, while Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. Now, we're going to talk about this a lot this year, about being clean and being unclean. We talked about it last year a little bit in Hebrews, but this is a big deal in the Jewish faith. You do not want to be unclean. You don't want to do things that make you unclean, because then you have to somehow become clean and offer a sacrifice or sit out from all the activities for a while. So Matthew, as a tax collector, would have been considered an unclean person. And Jesus is not only hanging out with him, he is eating with him. He is sharing a meal with him. That's making Jesus unclean. So when we pick up the story in verse 14, John's disciples, now these are the disciples who have been following after John the Baptist. John's disciples came and asked him, "How is it that we and the Pharisees fast often, but your disciples do not fast?" Jesus answered, "How can the guests of the bridegroom mourn while he is with them? The time will come when the bridegroom will be taken from them, then they will fast." There's a little foreshadowing there of Jesus' death, isn't there? Verse 16, and we read this in our synopsis, "No one sews a patch of unshrunk cloth on an old garment, for the patch will pull away from the garment, making the tear worse. Neither do people pour new wine into old wineskins. If they do, the skins will burst, the wine will run out, and the wineskins will be ruined. No, they pour new wine into new wineskins, and both are preserved." So what's going on here? Okay, so here's what we're seeing. Jesus and some of his disciples are feasting. They're sharing a meal, and they're celebrating. They're having a great time. John's disciples and some of the Pharisees are fasting. I love it. Feasting versus fasting. Why are they fasting? I'm not exactly sure, because there was really only one day in the year when God commanded his people to fast. If you go back to Leviticus, it's the Day of Atonement. But it seems that the Pharisees would take that a step farther, and some of John's disciples also, and they were probably fasting twice a week. And they were doing that to appear pious, to be holy, to show how consecrated they are. And possibly John's disciples, one commentary I read said, well, maybe they're fasting because they're mourning, because John the Baptist has been beheaded just prior to this. But more likely, they're probably fasting as an expression of repentance, to hasten the coming of the redemption. Now, isn't this ironic? Because he has come. He's here in the story. He's feasting with his friends. So the question they are asking Jesus is, why do your disciples not fast? And Jesus proceeds to give them three metaphors, or parables, we could call them either. The first one is the bridal metaphor. The next one is about the new garment and the new wine. Okay, now here's where we have to look at the context. Context, context, context. I took a real estate class. I was a finance major in college, and I had to take some real estate. And I remember the first day my professor said to us, he said, "You probably won't remember anything from this class, but I want you to remember the three rules of real estate. Location, location, location." You know it too, and I don't remember anything from the class, but I remember that. Okay, so this year, our three rules: context, context, context. These parables are not going to make sense to us unless we put ourselves in that part of the world 2,000 years ago and understand their ways and their lifestyle and their everyday life. Okay, so first up, the bridal metaphor. Okay, so as we read in verse 15, Matthew 9:15, Jesus says, "How can the guests of the bridegroom mourn while he is with them? The time will come when the bridegroom will be taken from them, then they will fast." Okay, so everybody would have been familiar with this at the time. Now, when you got married back in this day, a Jewish marriage festival lasted a week. It was like a week-long party. And the last thing you would be doing is fasting during that time, because everybody's celebrating, and fasting was usually reserved as more of an act for mourning or for repentance or for purifying yourself. Nobody would be fasting at a wedding party. So he's able to throw that out there, and they all understand exactly what he is talking about. Interestingly, sidebar, isn't it funny that when we are happy and when we are joyful, we tend to have an appetite? And when we are mourning, when someone has died, what tends to happen? We lose our appetite. That's a natural time that you might, especially if you were told to these days, want to fast. And yet, what do people do when we're mourning? They bring us a ton of food, don't they? I think we should change the way we do meal ministry. It's nice when you have a baby, though. That's a joyous time, and it's hard to cook. All right, so he gives them this metaphor about the bridegroom. And they would all say, of course, okay, of course, we get it. Then he goes into this metaphor about the wineskins. Now, in order to appreciate this, we have to get out of our current day. Okay, this is how we carry wine, right? We're familiar with this. Well, this is how they did wine. So when they were making wine, the new wine started out in a vat, and it would begin its fermentation process there. Then it would be transferred either into jars or into something called a wineskin. This is a picture of what a wineskin probably would have looked like. They were made from animal skins. They would shave the hair or remove the fur and stitch them together and make this big bag. So while the wine is sitting in this bag, it continues to ferment a little bit more. And I'm not a chemist, but I read that when fermentation happens, there's bubbling, there's carbon dioxide being released, and the wine is expanding. It's going to cause this wineskin to expand. So here we have this leather wineskin, which is starting to expand under pressure. And you know how leather gets sort of brittle as it gets older or tighter? So that's why he's saying what you would never do is take an old wineskin and put new wine in it, because what's going to happen? It's going to expand and explode, and then your wineskin is no longer good, and you're going to lose all of your wine. So as I read this, you know, I just have read through this in the past, and I've thought, yeah. As he says this to them, they knew exactly what he was talking about. You would never do that. When I first started driving and I got my first car, I began to have to put gas in it, and I realized how expensive gas was. And I can remember going to a gas station, maybe for the first time, and seeing that there were two prices. There was like the unleaded price, and then there was this other price. And so I thought, well, that one's cheaper. That's the one I'm going to get. So I pull my car up, and the nozzle wouldn't go into my gas tank. And I was like, well, that's strange. And so I went and got my gas. And then that night I was telling my dad about it. And he said, Jill, that was diesel. You can't, and if you've ever tried, you cannot put diesel gas in your car. Most cars, the nozzle won't even fit in. So you can't do something this stupid. He said, you can't put diesel in your car. And I said, well, it's so much cheaper. And he said, you have to have a diesel car to put diesel gas in it. So there would be like Jesus saying, you don't put diesel in your regular gas tank. And we would all say, of course not. Except for me, right? When I was in high school, I now know. So he gives them this example about the wineskins. Then the next thing he does is he explains this story about how you would never patch your garment with a piece of cloth that was unshrunk. So back in those days, this is a picture of maybe what the fabric was like. We don't know for certain, but they did not have malls and stores like we did, so if you got a hole in your garment, you would patch it. Most times today, we don't patch our clothing anymore, do we? Maybe if you grew up in the Depression, you would have patched your clothing, but they would patch their clothing. So when we read the unshrunk cloth, it literally reads that it's unfold, U-N-F-U-L-L-E-D. It's unfold cloth. And so what they would do is take their cloth to this person called a fuller, who would clean it and comb it, and that would remove the oil and the gum, and then they would bleach it. Then it was ready to be used to make a garment. For us, it's like pre-shrunk, right? So you can imagine if you had a hole and you sewed a patch on that hole that was about the size of the hole, but it was not pre-shrunk, it was brand new cloth, the first time you wash that thing, that patch is probably going to pull away and make the hole worse. That's exactly what he's telling them. And they would hear this and they would think, of course you wouldn't do that. So what do all three of those stories have in common? What is Jesus really trying to say? Well, the first, I found a bunch of I words. If you have another I word, I would love to add it to my slide. They are incompatible. New wine and an old wineskin, it's incompatible. It could be inappropriate. It would be inappropriate to be fasting at a wedding feast. They are inconsistent. These things are inconsistent with each other. You would not do them. And in some cases, maybe even inconceivable, like you wouldn't put diesel gas in your regular gas tank. Nobody would put new wine in an old wineskin. So what he's trying to point out to them takes us back to Hebrews last year. He's saying your old covenant in the old way that you've been doing things under Judaism as the Pharisees have taught you, it's incompatible with this new way of my kingdom and what I've brought to you. Out with the old and in with the new. Do you remember in Hebrews last year, there was a day when I showed a slide of a temporary roadway. So when they're doing construction in a city and they have all these temporary roadways set up, and we talked about how the old covenant was sort of like a temporary roadway. God put the law and put all those practices in place for a time, but it was never meant to be the permanent solution. When Jesus came, he ushers in the new covenant, and there's no longer a need for that old road system. So I thought we could have a little fun with this. Well, first I'm going to ask you a question. All right, this is the question that you get to ask yourself, which was convicting for me to ask myself. It's this: does my lifestyle and my attitude convey the joy of being in Jesus' presence? Does it convey the joy that I get to feast with the bridegroom? Or am I over here like John's disciples and the Pharisees, judging and asking questions and being skeptical? I thought it was a really convicting question. Okay, now we'll have some fun. All right, so I brought some objects for this part. I have this pair of shoes here. Jen Axel, are you here today? She's not, is she? All right, someone's got to help me out. Does this remind you of anything in particular, some of you fashion gals? Tell me. Yes! I'm going to say it really French. Christian Louboutin. All right. I didn't know about these shoes until my sister explained it to me a few years ago. All right, there's this French designer. For those of you who don't know, his name is Christian Louboutin. And his trademark is that he puts this red lacquer on the bottom of his shoes. Some of you may actually own a pair of these shoes, or if not, you have probably seen them. Our friend Oprah Winfrey wears them all the time. And every once in a while on the show, you'll see her kick her foot up and you can see the red. And you know she's wearing Christian Louboutin. I've always wanted to do that. Or here we have Sarah Jessica Parker. And what is that other gal's name? God, I don't even know. But you can see, it's kind of hard in the lighting, but if we turn the lights down, you can see the red. Oh, thank you, Tyler. Thank you. Now we can see it. You can see they are wearing Christian Louboutin. What's the big deal? These shoes are expensive. So I happen to have in my possession, oh my goodness, these are the real Christian Louboutins. I'll turn it so you can see it like that. It feels kind of, yeah, I'm putting my shoes on the altar. All right. Forgive me, Lord. They come with a beautiful dust bag. These aren't actually mine, by the way. And they come with an extra pair of the little heel replacements. All right, so if you go to the store and you buy these shoes, these are, I think, a couple years older model, although they've never been worn, you'd probably pay $700 or $800 for those. I know. This pair I bought at Ross Dress for Less, not because of that, but because it's real rubbery, and I thought they'd be good. They wouldn't slip around, and they were like $25. So it would be sort of like, now I got to be careful. This is just for fun. It would be sort of like in our day and age, if Jesus was addressing a group of fashion-forward women, he might say something like, why would you wear the old fake ones when you have the real thing in your closet? Why would you? He's the real thing. We have the real thing. The real thing came, and the real thing in this story was there feasting with his disciples, and they missed it. We have the real thing. Amen. Do you want to look at somebody next to you and say, we have the real thing? I have always wanted to do that. Look at someone next to you and say it. We have the real thing. All right, now back onto the Bible. We have one more parable to look at from the homework for today. It's the parable of the two builders. And if you have been in Sunday school, you surely saw a picture something like this of the wise man who built his house on the rock and the foolish man who built his house in the sand. Let's read it together, and then let's talk about it through adult eyes for just a minute. We're going to do that a lot this year. So many of these stories, we have heard them and heard them. And Kay, I heard you say there's always something new to be learned, and it's so true. All right, I'm in Matthew chapter 7, verses 24 through 27. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine, what words? Well, we'd have to look back. He just gave the Sermon on the Mount, okay? So Jesus is saying, anyone who hears all these words, everything I just explained to you, and puts them into practice, is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. All right, let's see if this helps us. Okay, he's telling this story in Palestine, and I have not been there. I would love to go there someday. It's a mountainous area, and there are places where it's like a canyon. We get this because we see this in Colorado in the mountains. You've driven through where there are canyons. And what would happen is there would be these torrential rainstorms, still are, and then it causes flash floods to run down through that canyon. So here's a picture of kind of the landscape. So what you would never do is you would never build your house right in the middle of that sand, would you? Because if there's a flash flood, it's going to get wiped out. Instead, what they would be familiar with is maybe building into the rock or building up on a rock at a place where if that water gushes down, it's not going to wipe out your house. So context, context, context. He's telling them this story, and they live there, and they know what he is talking about. What was the flood that happened here in Colorado? I think it happened the year before I was born. The Big Thompson, yes. And we heard about that. That's probably the closest thing living in Colorado. We have some appreciation for what this might be like. Let's break apart this parable for just a second. All right, here's what's interesting. We're starting with one group. And remember, Jesus is already talking to a group of people who are listening to him. He's got an attentive audience. I don't know if it would be fair to say that they're all Christ followers officially, but he's got a group of people who are all listening. So he starts out by saying, those who hear my words, the whole group that he's addressing, hears my words. He's not talking about Christians and non-Christians, I don't think. I think he's talking about two different types of people who claim to be Christ followers. The first group hears his words and obeys them. In other words, they live a life of discipleship. This is maybe the easiest way for us to contextualize it. If we hear his words and we obey them, that might look like living a life of discipleship. Now he tells them, the storms are going to come. The same storms come for both groups of people. Just because we follow him or we live a life of discipleship does not mean we're not going to have the storms come. But he makes a promise. He says their house will stand firm. Now here's what's interesting. Well, let's get there in a second. Group two. This group of people hears his words, but they ignore them. They don't obey them. And we can even see within ourselves that we have this temptation to be either way at any given time. We can hear his words and we can obey them, or we can hear his words and we can ignore them. So the people who ignore his words, he says, remember, those same storms are going to come, but the house will not stand. Here's what I love. I read this in one of my books, and I loved it so much. If you want to write it down, I'll keep it here for a second. Obedience to Jesus' words is not so much protection from troubles as protection in them. Obedience to Jesus' words is not so much protection from troubles as protection in them. The rock that the house is on does not protect it from a storm, but it supports the house during the storms. Now, I want to show you one more thing. I'm really giving you your money's worth today on the technical. I gave you a synopsis. Now we're going to do some Greek. All right. Bear with me. This is so interesting. Okay. Can you sort of see this? I wish I could make it bigger. Let's see. Tyler, maybe we can bring the lights down. It might help a little bit. All right. Here's what I want you to see. In verse 25, he's talking about the house that stands. Over on this side in verse 27, he's talking about the house that falls down. Okay. So look what happens here. We have almost the same words. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. In English, we see exactly the same thing. The winds blew and beat against the house. But if we could lift up the cover and read Greek, we would see that there's actually two different verbs. Verse 25 has one Greek verb. It's prospito, Would you like to say it? Presbyto. Presbyto. It's kind of fun. In that verse 25, presbyto is the verb that it's been translated to beat against. In verse 27, it's proskopto. Do you want to say it? Proskopto. It's only different by a few letters. It's a different verb. Now, they can both mean to beat against. That's why in most English Bibles, we see the words, the wind comes down and beats against the house. But here's what is so cool. In verse 25, that verb, presbyto, it can also mean to fall prostrate before. So it's like, it's almost like you could say, the winds come down and they fall prostrate to the house that is built on the rock. They bow to it in obedience. They do not tear that house down. Whereas in verse 27, the winds come and they blow, and that verb can mean to stumble. And just a stumbling of the wind is enough to destroy that house. That's the difference between being built on the rock, hearing and obeying Jesus' words, and hearing and ignoring them. You can withstand the wind. In fact, it will bow in obedience compared to just the slightest bit. Did you like that? Yes, you're so good. Can I show you one more thing? This is so funny. I want to ask a question first. This is the last question. On what type of foundation am I building my house? We are all building our house, aren't we? Every day, we are building our house. We have a life that we are knitting together. We have a family. Some of us have a career. We have all these things going on every single day. We are building our houses. But what foundation are we building them on? Are we hearing and obeying Jesus? Are we being disciples? Are we living a life of discipleship? Or are we hearing and ignoring? We get to make that choice as we build our house every single day. All right, I'm going to show you one more thing. We did a synopsis. Oh, you know what? I didn't tell you. Okay, if you don't want to buy a book like this, and oh my goodness, some of you are like, no, thank you. Tune out for a second. Okay, the reason I like this one that I did the page with the highlights on is because he actually does the spacing of the words so that you can see the differences. On the flip side of your handout, I provided you with a snippet from a free synopsis that you can access online. So I put the instructions down here for you. It comes from the Net Bible Synopsis of the Four Gospels. If you want to, it's a PDF file. I'll warn you, it's like 315 pages long. So if you're going to go to the trouble of printing all that out, you might, if you're into this kind of thing, you might prefer to have a synopsis. But this is free. You can access it anytime that you're doing your study and you want to see where does this story show up. Just the index of this thing is really helpful because it goes through each story in the Gospels and it tells you which gospel accounts that story shows up in. And then you can see the differences. He just doesn't do the spacing. So it's not quite as easy on the eyes. But that's a free synopsis for those of you who want to go for extra credit this year and really see the differences. It's so interesting, too, because the writer's personalities start to come out as we look at what they focused on, what they left out, what they added in. And remember, the papyrus paper that they're writing on, it's expensive. So they made choices about which words they chose to include. So it's kind of fun to see the differences. All right, now check this out. Last thing I'll show you. This is so old. I bought this on eBay. It smells like mildew. It's really a collector's item. But some man, I'll give him a name, Alan Barr. Oh, yes, Alan Barr. Look at this. He took all the stories from the Gospels, and he made this amazing color-coded chart that shows all these little lines of which ones are where. The colors mean, you know, like if it's pink, it means that it shows up in both Mark and one other gospel. This is so cool, too. I'm thinking about getting this laminated and hanging it on my wall in my bedroom. Just kidding. In my office. Anyway, if you ever want to see that, you come by my office. I'll keep that in there. All right. Ladies, how did we do for mix-up day? Was that confusing enough? Did we mix it up enough? All right. Oh, that's sweet. Well, you're gonna love what this does for you. You may have hated the process. You're going to love what it does for you. Let me pray and send you off to your small groups. Lord, we just thank you so much for your parables, for your stories. Would you help us to really digest these things in a way that makes them understandable, and even more than that, makes them applicable to our lives today? I just thank you so much for each woman in this room who has come and so diligently studied in preparation for today, and as she sat here today. And Lord, I just pray that you would be with us as we go to our small groups, be in our conversation, and help all of this to really sink into our hearts. We ask these things in Jesus' name.